So we're going to spend a few moments getting more quiet and contemplative and resting in the peace, in the serenity of spirit. Whoever we think we are, whatever moments of our history flood through our minds, whether from this morning or early in our life, the invitation is here to just let all of that go with your body in a comfortable position. See if you can allow each breath to fill you completely without strain, feeling and knowing the presence of God is in each moment, is in each breath. As each breath cycle repeats, allow that presence that which is beyond all description, that which has an infinite number of names. Allow that presence to enfold you, to fill your heart with peace. We'll just take some moments together with no narration, feeling the peace that passes all understanding, filling our hearts and our lives.
May our beings be well and happy. May our beings be free from strife. May our beings return to love and peace. Be with you forevermore, and peace be with you forevermore. happy. May all beings be free from strife. May all beings return to love, and peace be with you forevermore. And peace be with you forevermore. And peace be with you
right back at you. I'm really getting my exercise today, back and forth. It's always lovely to be invited to be part of this service, of this congregation. You are family to us, and we are. Our hearts are full. I've been looking out at all the faces I know and a few I don't know, and I hope we have a chance to speak in the rush before running off to the picnic. There's an exercise in values that teachers sometimes offer their students. They provide each class member with a large container, like a glass beaker, and with a selection of rocks and gravel, sand, and water. And the participants are asked to put all the materials inside their beaker. The students find out ultimately that the large rocks have to be placed in the container first, followed by the gravel and the sand, and then last, the water can flow in and fill all the space between the solid objects. This lesson is done to illustrate that in planning our lives, we have to know what the largest building blocks and the core values are in order to avoid having no room for those very critical, important things. It's a nifty trick. It's a strong visual image of that basic truth. This is not my lesson today. Now, I come here not to turn that lesson on its head and say that the sand and gravel should go in the beaker first. I can't contest that lesson. We need to know our priorities. I come here instead to say that while these big rocks in the beaker are important and are the bedrock principles in our lives, how we really live is on the scale of the grains of sand. Whatever we aspire to, whatever our values, our dreams, our course through the world is taken one short moment at a time, like particles of sand falling through an hourglass. Some research suggests, for example, that we experience our lives in divisions as short as 5 seconds, while other studies assert that we're conscious and have a kind of consistent experience of ourselves and the world throughout a time span as long as about 9 seconds. Before our brain shifts our attention and raises the curtain on a new stage set, resembling the previous one to a remarkable degree in most cases. And again, that new set of circumstances will hold our attention for something like 5 to 9 seconds before we move on to the next parcel of time. This is the limit of our short-term or working memory. And what I've read suggests that we don't consciously remember what happens in any of these brief intervals unless it's noteworthy enough to be viewed by our brains as having some distinct survival value. Like, I remember the hug that Robert gave me because it was so full and lovely, and I felt safe. If we think of our drive here today, could any of us recall the entire experience moment by moment? If so, contact CNN. What do we recall? Perhaps a moment when an oncoming car drifted toward our lane and our brain registered a threat. Perhaps seeing an eagle or a deer, maybe waving to a friend out for an early morning walk. But probably we don't remember the familiar scenery, except for when we noticed that a fence had fallen down, or some of those darn teenagers had gone out with baseball bats after the mailboxes again. Kevin, did you do that once upon a time? Tell the truth. In my clinical practice, running an intensive outpatient group, I had a guy who was a retired Snohomish County sheriff who told us a story about the mailbox is getting blown up by M-80s or something. Yeah, that was Kevin. And he said, I fixed all the mailboxes, mine and my neighbor's and my other neighbor. They're in a little stand, three or four. I fixed them all. And when my neighbor asked me, why'd you do that? I just said, I have a past. The point of all these thoughts, not so much the thing about the mailboxes, but what we were talking about, is to bring us to the main lesson. While there are big things to be reckoned with and savored in our journeys, we only experience them through small moments that we string together like beads to make up our lives. That is the takeaway. This whole topic arose when I arose early one particular day. This was a day when I had no special reason to get up early, none that I recall now. Of course, there could have been a reason, one that was not stored in my long-term memory, but was only in my 5 to 9 second working memory. But that was many, many memory segments ago, so who knows? Anyway, I was up, and I knew that there is someone in my house who loves to have her coffee in bed. This is a fact that has had sufficient repetition in my life to take up residence in my long-term memory. So I made a cup and delivered it to the master bedroom, where it was suitably appreciated. Later, Sally left on some mission while I was outside doing chores. What her mission was, I don't know now. Refer to previous comments about lack of storage of information that was once in short-term memory, unless you've already forgotten about that. But she swung past where I was doing something, and I said goodbye to her. Thanks for bringing me coffee in bed this morning, she said. That made me feel really special. I'm not exactly sure that she said those words precisely. They were only stored in my 5 to 9 second recall capacity, short-term memory. But that was the gist. And I said something like, oh, that was just a little thing. The little things are the big things, she replied. That part I remember because I said, that's it. That is a talk. and I wrote it down in my pocket notebook. The little things are the big things. Each moment is probably a little thing to each of us. Take today, no big deal, another Sunday. The psychic forecast is warm, comforting, pleasant, with a chance of ecstasy. But it ain't the Dalai Lama giving the lesson today. Marion Williamson is not making a cameo. Charles Fillmore's ghost won't come to the party. Oh, maybe he'll come to the picnic. It's just another day filled with little things, like they all are. What are we to do with this understanding? The little things are the big things. It might be a good framework to mention that the little things could be the blackberries and plums that you can now pick and feed yourself from. This is why I moved to the Northwest, by the way. I was in the Northwest around this time of year, and there were blackberries and plums just everywhere for me to eat. And I said, I want to live here. I have found Canaan. The little things can mean a small moment of generosity that sets the tone in a positive direction for the day. It can mean the earthworm I found stranded in Lowe's hardware parking lot and just took a moment to pick up and put into the planting strip where at least it had a chance to snuggle down into some dirt. It can mean the moment when I take a deep and unhurried breath, when any habitual anxiety or fear or worry falls away, and I have a strong sense of seeing my work and my purpose clearly. One of the little things may also be a second of frustration with my friend, or partner, or dare I say it, spouse? Couldn't be, never mind. Could be an eruption of words that I have not previously said out loud, but which have been festering inside. And finally, because I took no action to purge myself of this poison or heal myself of this resentment, they burst out of my mouth and wound someone. The little things can be the actions of gossip about someone in our family or workplace or church community, exercising but not exorcising our own demons of judgment or rancor. The little things could be a moment of unkindness or even being unkind by omission, forgetting to reach out to nourish a relationship, to say thank you. The little things, whether they are words or actions of love or anger, add up. Moment by moment, growth cell by growth cell, to the big things. What can we do to make the little things aggregate in such a way that they make beautiful big things, not sad or tragic ones? This, of course, is what we all have been working on for so many years, for so many incalculable number of the chunks of our 5 to 9 second working memories. How can I be more compassionate, more conscious, and above all, more kind? The word kind comes from the same root as the word kin or kinship. It refers to an attitude that we are all family. There's a story Ram Dass used to tell of putting out a record album. Do you remember those? Record albums.
Groovy.
Yeah, they were groovy. He put out a record album in the 70s of his talks, and he had his father, who was an attorney, question the selling price he was putting on the product. "Surely, Dick," he said, "you could get a lot more for this record. Charge all the market will bear." "Well, Dad," Ram Dass asked, "you're an attorney. You've done a lot of legal work for Uncle Freddie, right? I bet you've charged him a stiff fee for your services." His father got a little indignant and said, "Well, no, he's Uncle Freddie." "That's the problem," Ram Dass said. "I can't find anyone who isn't Uncle Freddie." You see, there's three things in human life that are important, as Henry James said. The first is to be kind. The second is to be kind. And the third, can you guess, is to be kind. Do not let kindness and truth leave you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart. These are words from Proverbs. So we all know that to be kind is the right way for us to live. The question is exactly how do we implement that kindness day to day, and remember that's our core value. I want to tell you a story I came upon about a man named David Wagner, who founded something called the Daymaker Movement, the entire purpose of which is making someone's day through kindness. David Wagner was a hairstylist. As far as I know, he still is, though he's also an author and speaker now. And he wrote these words about an event that changed his own course in life and clearly changed someone else's life as well. David's words are, "It takes only a moment to make someone's day. Sometimes these moments even change lives, as I discovered a number of years ago. I was working in my salon one day when a client came in to have her hair styled. I was surprised to see her, since it was right in the middle of her 5-week period between haircuts. Some people are very regular about getting their hair cut." He goes on to say, "I figured she must have an important social engagement, so I asked her about her evening plans. 'I don't have anything special going on,' she said. 'I just want to look and feel good tonight.' I gave her a great scalp massage, and then I shampooed and styled her hair. During our 30 minutes together, we joked and laughed. At the end, she smiled radiantly, hugging me goodbye. A few days later, I received a letter from this client, and I began to realize the enormous potential of day making. My client admitted that she had wanted her hair styled so it would look good for her funeral. She had planned to commit suicide that night. But the wonderful time she'd had during our appointment had given her hope that things could get better. She decided to check herself into a hospital and get professional help. She thanked me for caring, even though I hadn't known what she was going through. She wrote, Thank you for being there without knowing you were. I was stunned. I had spent time with this woman about once a month for 3 years, yet that day I had no inkling she was so distressed. I was glad to have made a difference, yet the experience left me with this enormous sense of responsibility. What if I had been upset, distracted, or hurried when she came to see me? That experience made me take stock of myself as a professional and just as a human being. How many of the 10 clients I saw each day might be in personal crisis? Even if it were only one person a day, I might have no way of knowing who needed the extra attention. I resolved to treat every person I met like I had treated that woman. It might sound like a lot of work, but it wasn't hard to have fun with my client that day. It was natural and made my day brighter too. After that experience, I vowed to give care and attention to everyone I saw. I figured it would help make their day better, and who knows, it might save a life. I still thank my client for the gift of that letter, because it changed my life as much as my kindness changed hers. When you realize the difference you can make for others, whether by spending a lighthearted half hour together, giving them a smile, or simply holding the door open for them, your whole approach to life shifts. Why have random acts of kindness when we can have intentional acts of goodwill? I love that story, and I've told it recently and could barely keep from crying. Crying is good. I encourage it. In closing, I'll tell you about one moment that made my day a little while ago. I was at a store, and I came to the checkout stand where the clerk said to me, "So, what you doing this weekend?" You know, sometimes I can't even think of an answer to this kind of question. Can you believe that? I'm often wool gathering, or I have earbuds in and I'm listening to some horrible something about the world's news. I was searching my mind for an appropriate response, searching, accessing something that might be remotely socially acceptable, and finally blurted out, "Well, I'm taking my wife to the airport Saturday." It was true. This cashier, unlike me, did not skip a beat. "That's all right," she said. "You have the boys over. And just remember to clean up the mess and hide the evidence." "That's all we want, for you boys to hide the evidence." So did I hide the evidence? I guess you'll never know. Sal never figured it out. But I'll tell you one thing. That lady's humor and twinkly-eyed kindness made my day. And when I told Sally about it, it made her day too. And then it made somebody else's day. Kindness doesn't have to be all solemn and boring. It can be goofy, fun, even spicy. These little things are the big things. And these little threads of kindness, of a shared moment, of a savored joke, all add up to the big tapestry of all of our lives together and are the unity that is all of us. We wrote a song that goes with this. Well, we literally have a drummer, so it's possible. Little things are the springs that wind us up. Little things are the coffee in our cup. Little things are the wings that help us fly. Little things like a cloud floating in the sky. Little things like a morning full of cheer. Little things like a bird call in my ear. Little things like the buzzing of the bees. Little things like the way that you smile at me. Little things,
like a butterfly.
Little things,
drifting through the sky.
Little things,
like a tender word.
Little things, only you have heard. Little things, give a pretty smile. When you walk down the road or the grocery aisle. Little things, make a happy song. Tap your feet, clap your hands, we can sing along. Are the rain and the waterfall. Little things are the ringtone when you call. Little things are the roses wet with dew. Little things are the things I'll always share with you. Little things are the things I'll always share with you. Little things, little things, little thing, little things, little things.
Thank you.
Right back at you.